Our second reading this morning is taken from Genesis chapter 2. I'll begin reading at verse 4. It's page 2 of the Pew Bibles. These are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created. In the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heavens, when no plant of the field was yet in the earth, and no herb of the field had yet sprung up, for the Lord God had not caused it to rain upon the earth, for there was no one to till the ground. But a stream would rise from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground. Then the Lord God formed man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living being. And the Lord God planted a garden in Eden in the east. And there he put the man whom he had formed out of the ground. The Lord God made to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food, and the tree of life also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Let us drop down now to verse 18. Then the Lord God said, "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make for him a helper as his partner." So out of the ground the Lord God formed every animal of the field and every bird of the air and brought them to the man to see what he would call them. And whatever the man called every living creature, that was its name. And the man gave name to all the cattle and to all the birds of the air and to every animal of the field. But for the man there was not found a helper as his partner. So the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man. And as he slept, he took one of the ribs and he closed up its place with flesh. And the rib that the Lord God had taken from the man, he made into a woman. And he brought her to the man. Then the man said, "This at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. This one shall be called woman, for out of man this one was taken. Therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and cling to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." And the man and his wife were both naked, and they were not ashamed. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, we're going to try a piece of technology this morning, and we'll see whether it works. We're going to try to project some slides up here from my iPad. Let's see if we're working today. I think we're trying. I'm getting a thumbs down, so pardon me while we take a brief technical timeout. That says it's working here.
Thumbs up.
Woohoo. There we go. I've got thumbs up, and hopefully, there we go, yay! Now, pray very hard for the technology. I didn't introduce myself very much, but I need to tell you two things about me. First of all, I'm the pastor at a new church development, which means I'm at the Howell Nature Center. The community I'm working with is called the Portico, and that's an unusual thing. There's a question we can ask, which is, why in the world do we really need another church in the United States? And I'd love to go chase that question, because the earth is shifting right under our feet, and the need for fresh expressions of the Christian faith have, in fact, never been greater. I'd love to go chase that rabbit, but that's not the rabbit I'm going to run down today. The other thing that is true is that I have the privilege of doing this new community at a place called the Howell Nature Center. Now, first of all, I want to stop and thank you. You were part of my absolute favorite place at the Nature Center. A couple of years ago, you teamed with the church in Brighton, I think Celine, there was a Baptist church involved as well, and you created a wonderful prayer labyrinth, which is at the Nature Center. I spend hours there. It's a phenomenal place. It's more phenomenal than people even knew when they built it, and someday I'd love to tell that story because it's just incredible, the stuff that's clustered there. That's where I am, is the Howell Nature Center. Now, the Howell Nature Center is a lot of things. It's always interesting to hear people try and talk about what we do there because we do day camping. So last summer, there were close to 10,000 camper days at the Howell Nature Center. So those are young men and young women coming to day camp, coming to resident camp, coming to nature camp, and we work with them. Right now, we're in the season of the year where we're bringing in a lot of school groups to do environmental education. But the most unusual thing we do at the Howell Nature Center is we do wildlife rescue. Now, let me show you what we do. We have an animal infirmary, and over the course of the year, that animal infirmary will handle about 2,000 animals a month. Or, I'm sorry, 200 animals a month. I said 2,000, that's way high. About 2,300 a year. Most of those are babies, so you can see here, I think that's a baby possum. They handle everything there. Now, you have the cute possum, right? Beautiful. Ooh, cute, I'd want to pet that. We also have a vulture. Ooh, not so cute. We handle them. People bring them in. In fact, we have a 24-hour hotline, so if you look out and find a baby coyote cub out in your yard, you can call our 24-hour helpline and say, I found a cub, what should I do? Last winter, we found a little rabbit's den in our front yard, and we didn't know. My kids, of course, oh, take the bunnies out, Daddy, rescue them. Unfortunately, I called the nature center and called their hotline and said, rabbits in my front yard, what should I do? And they said, leave them alone, because the mom's never there during the day. She'll come at night and feed them. So they gave me instructions. This is a baby pup. So we get to do that. It's cool stuff. We also, however, do a lot of animal rescue. This is a mature coyote, I believe, and he has mange. All right, he would die if it takes a treatment of drugs 3 times. Easy to do. But if he doesn't get drugs, he's going to die. So that's what we do there. Not only do we treat them on site at this infirmary we have, but in fact, if you know that you've got an animal with mange around, we sometimes provide it. We get involved a lot with animals that have unfortunate interactions with humans. And here's a doe, baby doe who's been hit. So 2 casts on the front leg. I live on the nature center, and we walk with my dog every day. We have deer all over the place. Baby turtles. We have our vet has developed. I mean, you know, what do you do with a turtle that got ran over? Well, you fix the shell. And so our veterinary clinic has found ways to do that. You can do wonderful things with duct tape and epoxy that you wouldn't even dream of. All right, here's another coyote who got involved, I think, in an unfortunate altercation, was scratching at itself, and so she or he got the cone of shame. And it's a cool place. I've done volunteer time in the infirmary. When I was there last winter, we had this group of baby squirrels that were brought in. Baby squirrels, it's incredible. It was like you could watch this cage and just like rock and roll all day long. I mean, you put the shades over it and it's still going. It's a cool place. Like I said, hundreds of animals a month. It costs about $250,000 a year to do the wildlife work that's being done at the Howell Nature Center. And there's a question that gets asked, which is, why in the world are we doing that? How did a good Presbyterian church camp get caught up in the animal thing? This morning, I want to brush on that, and I want to brush on it out of the second creation narrative, which is the Genesis 2 narrative. You're doubtless much more familiar with the creation narrative in Genesis 1, which is the 6-day narrative. But we're looking at a different narrative, because I happen to know that Pastor Bryant preached on the Genesis 1 narrative a while back. So we're going to go over to Genesis 2. But out of it, I really want to get at this question, which is, why in the world would a Presbyterian camp get involved in doing wildlife rescue? If you go out there, I mean, we pretty much are fundraising all year round to bring in the money to do what we're doing. It's not denominationally supported activity. It's stuff that we take on to do. I want us to think this morning about the Genesis 2 narrative for just a moment. In Genesis 2, there is this group of things that are created. And I need for you just to get one idea out of this narrative. And once you get this idea, everything else will make sense. If you start out in Genesis 2, verse 5, when no bush of the field was yet in the land, no small plant of the field had yet sprung up. Now, it's different than the order in Genesis 1, because in Genesis 1, the creation of the man and the woman happens on the 6th day. So everything else has happened. In the Genesis 2 narrative, because we have a different piece of narrative being driven by different concerns, and we can talk about that on the side if you want to, what it says was that there was nobody to work the ground. The Lord God formed the man, and it says, of the dust of the ground, and breathed into the man's nostrils the breath of life. And the man became a living being. There's a word play that you don't pick up in English, but that's probably pretty incredible. Sorry, I'm going to give you my whole Hebrew vocabulary today in one sermon. The word that's usually translated in Genesis as man is that bottom word, ha-adam, or adam. That is both the name Adam and the generic term in Hebrew for a man, particularly, adam. It happens that the word for ground in Genesis 2 is Adama. Now, you don't have to pay for a seminary education to realize that Adam and Adama are really close to each other. If we didn't get the idea, and it's there, that Adam and the ground are really close, we would get it out of the names, because Ha'adam is made out of Ha'adama. So the man, now this is different because in the stories of creation around the nation of Israel, I'm particularly referencing the stories that they would have run into in Babylon in the captivity, something you'll find out on the internet called the Enuma Elish. In those other creation narratives, you always have to explain how human beings come into existence. And usually, human beings are the product of something that went wrong with the gods. In the Enuma Elish, human beings, you and I exist because the patron god of Babylon, Marduk, got into a fight with, I think, his stepfather, another god, and Marduk takes a sword to his stepfather, chops him up, and from those little godlets that Marduk makes, human beings come. There are other creation stories where gods get in fights and they sword with each other and god blood is spilt and humans come out of that divine blood. It's important that in the Hebrew narrative of creation, humans aren't an extension of the gods because for the Hebrews, well, the Hebrews were monotheists. They only believed that there was one God. And so when the Hebrews went to understand themselves, they understood that God had created them from the ground. So Adam came from Adama. It's important in the creation story. Then we move along, because once we have Adam to work the ground, well, then it says in verse 9, out of the ground the Lord God made to spring up every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food. And the tree of life was in the midst of the garden and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So catch the yellow phrase, because we're told that Adam is formed out of the ground, and then we're told that the trees were formed where? Out of the ground. It's going to vary a little bit English translation to English translation, but in the Hebrew it's exactly the same construction. You couldn't miss it. Well, you could, I guess. And look at verse 19. And this is where it gets fun, because we're going to skip out a bunch of this narrative. I don't really have time to go chase the whole man and woman and the creation of Eve thing, and that would be another question for another day. But I want you just to look at verse 19 for a second. Now, out of the ground, the Lord God had formed every beast of the field and every bird of the heavens and brought them to the man to see what he would call them. In the Genesis 2 narrative, God looks at Adam and says, it's not good for you to be by yourself. So I'm going to make something to go with you. It's called a helper. And I think the Authorized Version says a helper fit for him. It really has the idea of somebody who can look eye to eye to Adam. I have a wonderful pet dog. I get to live, my son now lives with me. He was a freshman in college, but for the last 5 years, my family has maintained the family home in Grand Rapids. I've traveled. So I have this wonderful companion named Allie. Allie's a golden retriever. I refer to Allie as my child who will never leave. Right? And some days, Allie is the favored child in my family. It just depends on what day it is. But Allie and I always stand shoulder to shoulder. The truth is, Allie and I can never stand eye to eye. First of all, because she's on four legs and is short, and so I have to get down, and once I get down, she thinks I'm her and starts to bite me. And secondly, because I'm tall and I don't like her standing up. So we never stand eye to eye. And in this narrative, what God is doing is looking for something that can stand eye to eye with Adam. Notice what it says, out of the ground. Where did Adam come from? Out of the ground. Where did the trees come from? Out of the ground. Where did the animals come from? Out of the ground. Do you get a theme here? Where is everything coming from? Out of the ground. Doing all of this stuff out of the ground because, well, we need somebody to work the ground is the opening statement, I think, in verse 5 or 6. And then once we have that, then we need to support Adam. Incidentally, if you want to portray God because of our Reformed tradition, I mean, my forefathers would be willing to riot over any image of God. So I figure an image of God done in Legos is perfectly safe. So there's God forming the animals out of the ground in a way that my Puritan forefathers might at least not disapprove of violently. Then read very carefully the creation of the woman down in verse 21. So the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man, and while he slept, he took one of his ribs and he closed up the place with flesh. and the rib that the Lord God had taken from the man. Everything else here is created out of the ground. The one thing that's unique is the helper is created from the man. He made into a woman and brought her to the man. Again, my Lego figures. There's another word play that we get to pick up. We pick it up when Adam starts talking about this. The word for man throughout the story has been Adam, and all of a sudden we change. If you look in verse 23 and 24, your English Bible just have the word man. It doesn't let you know there's something going on. But the Hebrew underneath has changed, and all of a sudden it's no longer Adam, it's Ish. Because Ish, the man, the word in 23 and 24 for man, now goes with the woman, which is Isha. And again, we can hear the connection, Ish and Isha. What's going on in the Genesis 2 creation narrative is a simple truth, which is that everything is connected to everything. God creates the earth, and then from the earth God creates the man, and from the earth God creates the trees, and from the earth God creates the beings, and then at the end, from man God creates the woman. Everything is connected to everything, and right in the center of it stands, well, the man. We express that in some interesting ways. I'm actually going to change my order here. We all are familiar with this piece from the Sistine Chapel, right? The finger of God reaching out and animating the man, because we all know that Adam is created in the image of God, and we read the Genesis 2 story and we see all of these connections, and somehow, well, we translate that in interesting ways because we assume that Adam stands kind of at the top of a pecking order. But I want you to notice Genesis 2:5 and 2:15 very carefully. In Genesis 2:5, before Adam is ever created, what it says is, "When no bush of the field was yet in the land, no small plant of the field had yet sprung up, for the Lord God had not caused it to rain on the land, and there was no man to work the ground." The Hebrew word there for work is the stem evid. It's the same stem down in Genesis 2:15. The Lord God took the man, put him into the Garden of Eden to work it and to keep it. Evid. That happens to be the same stem from which the Hebrew word for servant or slave is derived. What you have is a verb in Genesis 2, but that verb comes really close to not just to serve, but comes, or not just to work, but to serve. It's an interesting verb. If you go into the Old Testament, God is never the subject of the verb evid. In the Old Testament, we're never told that God serves or works anything. Why? Because God creates, God speaks, things happen. But the man, Adam, is created, and it says specifically, to work or to serve the ground. See, we look at the picture, and we think, oh, cool. I'm from the top of the food tree. I'm Darwin's winner. Not only am I Darwin's winner, but in the Old Testament, I'm created in the very image of God. Michelangelo tells me that. But we're not reading the Genesis 2 story carefully. I need to cut forward now. I need to cut forward because I need to finish this morning in the New Testament. See, I'm a New Testament scholar. I did my academic work in the New Testament. I hold a PhD in New Testament studies from one of the best schools that you could do that kind of work at. So I'm not an Old Testament person, I'm a New Testament person. And when we look at the New Testament figure of Jesus, it's interesting because Jesus is what we would call the upside-down king. Jesus comes into a world that's defined by power and might, and Jesus says, if you want to be strong, be humble. And Jesus says, if you want to be exalted at the feast, better sit at the back. And Jesus says, if you want to be robed like royalty, learn humility. Here's Jesus out of Mark 10. Now you know those who are considered rulers of the Gentiles, they lord being a ruler over them. Their great ones exercise authority. But it shall not be so among you. People who claim to be my followers. But Whoever would be great among you must be your servant. And whoever would be first among you must be the slave, the eved, the servant of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." We have this great little phrase that Jesus uses, the Son of Man. Boy, try getting your Strong's or Young's Concordance out, whatever you use, and run that one down sometime. If I had hair, I would pull it out trying to figure out what the Son of Man is. But when Jesus uses the term the Son of Man, one of the things he's trying to do is to point back into the Old Testament narratives. Because Jesus is saying, just as there was Adam and Adam did these things, so I'm doing the same thing. Jesus is called the second Adam. And when Jesus references himself as the Son of Man, he's pointing back and he's saying, I'm picking up that role. And what does Jesus say? As the Son of the Man, he comes not to be served, but he comes to serve. We are not the winners of the evolutionary fight. We are not divinely bestowed with the ability to go out and pillage the creation. God didn't put this here as our giant Christmas present to be opened whenever it's convenient for us. God put us here with a mandate to serve this good creation that God has set here. And God calls us. So I said at the beginning, I wanted to answer the question, why in the world would a good Presbyterian day camp and overnight camping facility get involved in the question of animal rescue? Why would we invest the kind of time and effort that we invest there? In handling babies and puppies and mange-ridden coyotes. What's that about? It's about trying to do what we are all called to do, which is follow as Jesus' disciples, as servants. And so you and I are called today to go out, not as great people, not as powerful people, not as special people. We are all of those things, but Jesus says if we're great and powerful and special, then let's express it in a particular way, and that particular way is to take up the act of service to those around us, to the creation around us, to the good earth from which we come. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Thank you.